Welcome to another edition of the Inside Scoop. My name is Neil Crawford. I'm your host and also the founder of Anytime Soccer Training. If you're not familiar with the Inside Scoop, it's a podcast dedicated to helping parents learn about the soccer pathways that would be available to their child if they lived in another city around the world. And this show is brought to you by Anytime Soccer Training. Anytime Soccer Training is the only training program with well over 5,000 training videos that covers all the major individual skill areas. So check out anytime-soccer.com to learn more about the program. And now let's get on to the show. So I'm not sure if you know this or not, but I am also the host slash admin creator of a Facebook group called Youth Soccer Guest Playing Opportunities. Again, I'm the admin of a Facebook group called Youth Soccer Guest Playing Opportunities. And what that group does, and it does it very well, we've been pretty successful with it, is that it matches parents and players who are looking for guest play opportunities with coaches, clubs, and director of coaches who are looking for players who want to guest play. They just post the stuff in the group and they match each other. And that group started, or at least I started that group, because if you've been following this podcast, you know that my older son, his club is really, really small. And for many years, they were not part of any of these sanctioned official leagues. As a matter of fact, it did not appear to be a top priority for them in some ways. Now, fortunately, over the last few years, that's changed a bit. And I think that's helping them recruit and all that kind of stuff. So that's a good thing. But back in the day, it was just not something that was really happening. And so, because I was working with my son, I saw he was really into it, even though he was pretty young. I thought, when he gets older, how am I going to find good tournaments and showcases for him to participate in? Because it didn't look like our club was going to do that. And I wanted him to get some different experiences and all that kind of stuff. And as you can imagine, you go on YouTube and you look at the, not YouTube, sorry. You go on GAT Sport and these other websites and try to find tournaments that you can guest play. And you can find events at times, but it's very transactional. You don't know if it's going to happen. There's no community. So I just created the Facebook group to address that. And it also is a great way to get my name out there and offers real value to parents in the soccer community. And I've had a lot of people respond to me saying thank you in terms of they've been able to find guest playing opportunities or they've been able to find players, even my own friends who don't follow anything I do in soccer perspective in many cases, they've even been able to find some guest playing opportunities. So that's great. So check out the Youth Soccer Guest Playing Opportunity group if you have it, and I'll put it in the show notes. Well, in order to drum up engagement and sort of keep people coming to the group and that kind of stuff, I've started asking the group just random questions. Try to keep them. I try to keep them guest player specific, but just ask the group questions and let people comment and give their opinions. It's just a fun thing to do every morning. And that is going to be, so one of those questions is going to be the subject of this very short podcast. So a couple of days ago, I asked, do y'all think, and that's right, do y'all think it would be good for player development if clubs made guest playing with other clubs an official part of their gaming program? So, again, do y'all think it would be a good idea for player development if clubs made guest playing with other clubs an official part of the gaming program? So I am not familiar with a club that does this, and I actually don't have any. I don't have a view on it one way or the other, but I'm not familiar with the club saying, this is one of our unique selling points, or this is something that we offer, which is an opportunity to play with other clubs, and we kind of help organize it for you and source the other clubs for you. We have this sort of relationship. I haven't seen that. So that's number one. So what that means is, when it comes to guest playing opportunities, it's normally a parent going out trying to find guest playing opportunities for their kids. So in the comment section where the magic happens, one of the parents asked me. He's a social media friend of mine. He said, "Hey, we talk about development, but does playing with the same team in the same players stunt your players' growth, making you a placement player, or does it not matter?" Now, I am not 1 zillion% sure what he means by placement player. I guess maybe like a role player, or how we in youth soccer, you hear that players, especially in the US, can be a bit robotic. But assuming he's talking about robotic, let me just read the question one more time for clarity. We talk about development, but does playing with the same team and the same player stunt your player's growth, making you a placement player, or does it not matter? And I thought this was an interesting question because it kind of overlaps my experiences with my older son and some of the decisions that we made and some of the things that I contemplate when it comes to where he's at, which club he's at, and what he does. I've done that over the last few years. So I thought, let me hop on a podcast and give an answer to that question. It's not really a right or wrong answer, just my thoughts, instead of trying to type all this stuff into the chat. So the first thing is, we have to recalibrate and remind ourselves, at least how I define development, right? That's the first step. And when it comes to player development, there are a lot of different definitions and ways of thinking about it. But what I tend to try to do is put my parent consumer protection hat on. I am also the unofficial director of the Parent Consumer Protection Agency. And in doing so, the first thing I like to do is separate the soccer-specific player development goals, milestones, processes from the more general, holistic player development objectives. Now, the more general, holistic player development objectives are extremely important, and you can argue that they're actually more important than the soccer-specific stuff. You want to raise a leader, a whole person, a nice human, a team player, and this kind of thing. In the soccer club, hopefully, has a higher mission than the soccer-specific things that they happen to be doing. But at the same time, when it comes to evaluating a club, when it comes to understanding the value that you're receiving, when it comes to understanding how you can best help your player, when it comes to having a conversation about player development, all that kind of stuff, I have found it best to narrow the scope of the discussion to the soccer specific things, because the other non-soccer stuff, number one, is subjective. Number two, it's very personal in some respects, right? And then, in addition to that, other institutions, including the family unit, play either a similar role, or in most cases, a more important role than the actual soccer club does. Where on the flip side, they're not of their no the other sorry about that other institutions like the family, the church, the Boy Scouts, the schools, they're not promising player or soccer specific player development. So we want to narrow it down to soccer specific player development. And so within that context, I say, development is a process that can be replicated, that takes the natural ability and takes what the player brings to the table, right? Their drive, their physicality, whatever they're bringing, that raw stuff that the player is bringing to the table, it takes that, teaches them something, trains them, educates them, right? In an effort to accelerate, improve on-field performance and decision making. As an individual player, as a team or unit, and then as an individual operating in a team setting, right? So I said a lot there, and I've done a whole podcast on development. So we'll just repeat this and then be done with it. But it's a process that can be replicated. And I say that can be replicated because there should be a degree of intentionality, lessons learned. And I'm not a big fan of when you ask people, what is something? Oh, it depends on this. It depends. Okay, I get it. But there's a core process that I think an organization should have that, if followed, you will yield certain results. And a portion of those results should be relatively predictable, right? So it's a process that can be replicated that takes what the player is bringing to the table, right? Teaches them something, trains them, educates them on the game in an effort to accelerate, improve development. And this acceleration is very important as well, because if you are playing soccer 3 days a week and you have a game on the weekend, you're going to get better. It's very difficult not to get better. So we're trying to get an accelerated clip there, accelerate on-field performance. And the on-field is important because we're not talking about, do you open the door for your mom? We're not talking about you were a C student, now you're an A student. All of that stuff is important, right? But hopefully those values can be taught in other ways. But the soccer specific stuff in the on-field performance is in the purview of the soccer club, right? And so it's the on-field performance and decision making as a team, as an individual, and as an individual within that team. So that is what development is. So when we go back to that initial question, we talk about development, but does playing with the same team and the same player stunt your players' growth in making them a placement player and that kind of stuff, or does it not matter? Well, it's in that context. Does your process depend on other players in that way? That's really the question, right? And when we so then the next thing is, when we think about development, I believe there are many components that impact development, right? And I think I've done a podcast on that, but this is the common sense stuff, right? I think the biggest driver of one's development, I say common sense, I don't know if this is common sense or not, but the biggest driver of one's development is what they themselves do, especially during that time that they're not with the team, because that's time that they can focus on themselves. And that's the majority of the time they have available to them. The majority of the time, you're not going to be with the team. And what you do outside of that context is by far the greatest driver of your development. And then what you do when you're in those team environments, excuse me, do you have the right attitude, the right intensity, the right frame mindset? Then that is the second biggest driver of your development. Other components of your development is the overall environment, right? Do you live in, are you in Brazil where everybody plays, in a culture where everybody plays? Are you in sunny, moderate temperatures, that kind of stuff, right? Then it's the coach and the other players and the level of competition. So I say all that to say other drivers of your development are going to be the other things you do outside of the structured environment, right? And when those things that you do outside of the structured environment are definitely influenced a great deal by the culture and the environment that you operate in, right? But when we start talking about the structured environment, when we start talking about development within the structured team context, and we've already said what the individual does is the most important thing, now we're narrowing it down to how do those actors in that structured environment What role do they have in development? And I have gone on record to say, once you get past what the, once you acknowledge it as the individual first, then to me, the next biggest driver is the coach's ability to create intrinsically valuable, intrinsic learning experiences in the team training environment that replicate the game. And then it's their ability to offer relevant and timely instruction that results in better decision making and improved on-field performance. So it's the coach's ability to create game realistic scenarios over and over and over and over again that have the same intensity, the same reverence, the same attention to detail as what will be expected in the game, right? Same consequences, all of that. And then offer relevant and timely instruction in a way that when the player takes it on board, improves decision making and on field performance. Now, one thing I did leave out when I talked about development is you need to overlay that process with objective and subjective metrics that demonstrate and illuminate if development is happening. So even those game realistic scenarios that the coach is constantly creating with the same reverence and same intensity and all that kind of stuff, you should they're not going to do this. I don't think it's what people do, but you should technically be able to evaluate if a player is developing within those scenarios by establishing both objective and subjective metrics. Subjective stuff is literally going to be watching and using your experience to see how they're playing. And objectively, you're going to have, okay, if you are improving, these are the things, these are the markers that we can count that kind of tell us that that's happening. Doesn't mean it's 100% happening, right? Because there are other variables, but that trend is leading in the right direction. How many times you lose the ball? How many times you break lines? How many times you win, excuse me, your 1v1s? How many successful passes? How many touch, even how many touches you're able to get in a certain situation? All of that stuff should be able, you should technically be able to count it, and it should signal if development is happening, because development again is accelerated on field performance. I should be able to put someone who has not been through your process in that game realistic scenario, and they should not, all things being equal, be able to perform as well as those people, those kids who have been through your process for a significant amount of time. And so then, now that we know it's those game realistic scenarios that are being created on a daily basis that have the same relevance and the same intensity and reverence and all that kind of stuff as the game, we know that. And then we know it's the coach's ability to give relevant instruction to improve on-field performance and decision making. Then it's the micro interactions between the coach. So does that coach make you confident? Do you want to run through a bridge for them? Or every time they speak, they do the opposite. So it's those micro interactions between the coach and the player that are very important. And then it's those interactions, and this is where we get to the question, it's those interactions between the players that are very important. But here's the rub. Those in a structured environment, those interactions between the players oftentimes are governed and influenced by the coach and the culture, the team culture club culture that those players are operating within. Otherwise, those interactions to me are not as meaningful. So, playing with different players who are not exhibiting the intensity that you need, the in an environment where the attention to detail is not emphasized, and in an environment where they don't have the same expectation during training as they do in the game. I don't necessarily see playing with different players mattering as much as one might think. But playing, but it's, yeah, I mean, I can't say any other way, right? So I say that this is a very nuanced thing to say. Oftentimes I see people chase with situations where the children are perceived to be better, not really appreciating that those children in a structured environment are operating within a culture, and you kind of need to understand that in addition to what the kids are doing or not doing. And this is, of course, assuming that we've excluded the extremes, okay? Now, and so in that regard, I would, so in the most basic plain language, I would rather my kids be with the same team and the same coach and almost the same players to an extent, right? You kind of grow out of anything after a certain amount of time. If, again, those other things I've talked about, the individuals taking care of business, and the coach is creating realistic game-like situations with the intensity that's required, attention to detail, and providing relevant instructions that improve on-field performance. And the kids now are interacting in accordance to that culture of high-performance culture, in accordance to the intensity the coach is demanding, in accordance to the decision-making the coach is demanding. And those kids are improving their decision making and on-field performance. I'd rather, if the trade-off is that versus different kids, then I'm gonna go with that. Now, and I'll conclude with this, however, I believe in my worldview that a diversity of experiences are intrinsically better than any particular experience. And I'm also very hesitant, especially when we're talking about development, to place my bets or rank different experiences. I just think that a diversity of experiences is intrinsically better. So if my children, and this is how it was with my older son, if they're in an environment that works for them and it happens to be a small club with a lot of the same players, then the onus is on me representing the individual, which in this case is my son, to seek out a diversity of experiences to counteract that club experience he receives. And what that looked like and looks like in real life is, especially when he was younger, and my younger son still does this to some extent, playing in Hispanic leagues. That was one thing. Club environment, not a club team, relatively structured environment, team environment, totally different playing style, different kids, obviously different language in some respects, and that was cool. Then he played indoor, played some futsal. And then, of course, a heavy dose of free play, a free heavy dose of free play with his friends, and a heavy dose of free play. My wife happens to be African, so Ethiopian, but these guys are mainly West African. But the point is, heavy dose of free play in the West African community. So that was my way of trying to get a diversity of experiences. And he has guest played at times. One time, his club organized a guest played. I think the club director's friend needed some players. And my son has guest played a couple other times here and there, all in the effort to get a diversity of experiences. So yeah, that's, I think I'm trying to make sure I don't miss anything, but That's the main thing is, a diversity of experiences is better than any single experience. And the players and the level of competition and all these other things have a role. But to me, in the structured environment, the fundamental thing is the interactions of the players, which is governed by the adults, how the culture that the adults create. I knew I was dragging it on because there was one more point I wanted to make and I almost forgot it. Now, in a non-structured environment, right, when there are no parents around and there are no coaches around, then the peers have a tremendous influence, right? And so take that for what it's worth. In the structured environment, I don't care as much about what's going on with these guys. But in the non-structured environment, I wanted my sons, I think this is just common sense stuff, to play with older kids, to play with younger kids, to play with kids of different nationalities, play with di kids of different ethnicity, play with kids of different skill levels, play with adults, play with toddlers. I just wanted them to play with anybody who was willing to play with them because I do think you want them to get exposed to a lot of different types of kids. Again, I hate saying this, but I'm just answering the question. And that helps their development, especially when the adults are not around, because that's when the kids can really truly be creative and experiment. Oftentimes I hear people, adults, they'll say, well, we want our kids to be brave. We want our kids to make mistakes. We want our kids to take risks. Who cares if the U10, if you win the game at U10? I hear this. Well, the problem is the kids care. And unless they have zero soccer IQ and awareness, by default, they're going to be a little bit more conservative in what they do than if it was just free play. And I think if you want creativity, you want kids taking risk and being brave, and you want them to get those types, that type of feedback and encouragement, and then to be able to do that in a way that translates to the game, you have to put them in an environment where there are no consequences for that behavior. Because if you put someone in, this is a horrible example, but it will be like, you go into a surgeon who's about to have opera, who is about to perform operation, and be like, hey, don't worry about if you make mistakes. It doesn't matter, And that's kind of how I feel a little bit with our, with the logic we use with our kids that, oh, because the game should not matter to us adults, we want to encourage the kids to take risks and be creative. And we do want that, especially in the final third. But we have to understand that we're asking someone to do something that's not necessarily natural. And I'm not a big fan of asking people to do things that's not natural. So what that means is I'm not a huge fan of telling people to, for all practical purposes, ignore numerical disadvantages, right? In the name of being creative, hold on to the ball too long in the name of dribbling in a structured game. If I want you to do that, again, I keep going back to the same thing. I'm going to create environments where that is celebrated. And one of the ways I create that environment is I have my sons free play every weekend, and then they can kind of run around, do whatever they want. And then I can see, along with the structured training that I do with them at home, I see that that helps them become more creative in these games. And I'll end with one more caveat, but they all have their own personalities. So my older son is, I mean, he's turning into a natural six. So he's very clinical in what he does. He ain't gonna be doing too much stuff that he doesn't need to do. He's gonna move the ball, get the ball off his feet. Some of that comes from the club he's in. Is he a robot? Maybe, I don't know. But that's just his personality. So you can't make somebody be something they're not. But that's my view on that. All right. So I tried to answer as best I could. Thank you guys for joining the group. If you're not a member of the Youth Soccer Guest Player Group, I encourage you to join. I'll ask these questions, and then sometimes I'll weigh in with my own harebrained opinion. Take it for what it's worth. My name is Neil Crawford. I'm the founder of Anytime Soccer Training. Let's get better together.